Well, as is fairly obvious, all of our lectionary texts deal to some extent or another with seeing true reality. And spiritual blindness, looking at this whole idea that there's more to life than what we can see, what we can touch. But even more than that, it deals with this whole idea of how strong our assumptions can be. I've always enjoyed this story in John. It's one of the rare episodes of humor in here. At least I find it kind of amusing, where you have this formerly blind person. And we don't know whether he did this on purpose or not. And I've always felt that he probably did. Where he said, "Oh, you want to become his disciples too?" And they're asking him questions, which of course was probably about the worst thing you could possibly say. But it's a fascinating story. And it's all, to me, it all revolves around how we think. And there's two ways that you can look at this whole sort of blindness issue. One is from that whole perspective of just simple ignorance. And that whole idea, you know, if a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? Well, it makes noise, but it doesn't make a sound because if there's nobody there to hear it, then fine. And here, if you have authentic ignorance, then people can't be willfully blind. They're just blind. But I think for the Pharisees, it's a little bit more than that. And, Heather's been going through one of her classes is on logic. And so we've had a lot of conversations about how we think and how logic plays a part, or more to the point, doesn't play a part in much of our daily interactions. And one of the most powerful things that we have are sort of a priori assumptions or arguments, which is where you know what the answer is before you ask the question. That's what it comes down to. And we do this all the time, whether we like it or not and whether we notice it or not. We do this all the time. And we see it coming up most clearly in this story and in verse 16, where some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." So if we take a step back, we have to sort of give an overview of the whole story. There's a man who's been born blind. The Jesus' disciples, trying to find some theological point in here, say, well, who sinned that he was born blind, him or his parents? And I've always thought that's kind of odd. If he was born blind, what sin did he do that he would be born blind? I don't think you can sin before you're born. And I don't think judgment comes on what you will someday do either. It doesn't seem to work that way. So I'm not quite sure what the disciples are after there. But so we have somebody who's born blind, and Jesus says it's got nothing to do with sin. In this particular case, this person's born blind so that the power of God might be revealed, and he restores his sight. Turns out that Jesus, as he so frequently did, interacted with people 7 days a week and did this on the Sabbath, which was, according to at least some people, incorrect. And because he did it on the Sabbath, the Pharisees made the assumption, at least some of them did, that because he did this on the Sabbath, what he did could not be from God. And if that isn't an a priori assumption, I don't know what is. It's making the decision before you see everything before you and saying, because of this, what follows must be that, which doesn't always hold true, and certainly doesn't in this case. And so what we end up in the rest of the story, other than the occasional moments of amusement, we also get a better idea of exactly how powerful the Pharisees were. For the parents of someone who'd been born blind, I can't imagine this was anything other than a cause for rejoicing, and yet they were extremely guarded in their interaction with the Pharisees and refused to be committed in any way, saying, look, you know, don't talk to us about this, because it was potentially, socially, very dangerous for them to end up on the wrong side of the Pharisees. They get kicked out of the synagogue, which meant not just that you couldn't worship, but it pulled the center out of your social relationships where you interacted with people. So this is a big deal. But what it comes down to is this whole question of blindness. Well, who's actually blind? And is somebody blind, or are they just not seeing? We can look at all kinds of things and not see what's there. Yeah, sometimes you get these in these optical illusions or these things that trick our eyes, and you look at it, and from one perspective you see a vase, and from another you see two people, or all of those things. What you see isn't necessarily what's actually there. And if you ever want to see this in action, really good photographers and the rest of us. Because see, when we go to take pictures, how many of you have taken a picture of this beautiful thing and then looked at the picture on the back of your camera, or thinking back to when you actually got it developed, and there was a branch in the way or something else? Well, most of us have done that or something like it. Because what we see isn't necessarily what's there. Great photographers see what actually is going to be in the picture. We see what we want to be in the picture. So when we're looking through the viewfinder, looking at the back of our camera or whatever it might be, what we see is the beautiful sunset that's there, and we miss the fact that there's a branch halfway through it because we just look past it. So are we blind to branches? Do we suddenly have hysterical branch blindness, or whatever you want to call it? Well, of course not. But we see what we expect to see and what we want to see. And this is just normal. This is a good part of the filtering of our world. I was at a seminar not that long ago that said we get some horrifyingly large number of pieces of information as input all the time. It's along the lines of 11 million things. That's like what we feel, what we see, what we hear, everything that we, like right now, all the things that are going through our minds, or could go through our minds, from the color of what somebody's wearing, to the moving of the fans, to the flicker of a light, to something outside, all of these. Most of these we filter out. We can actually manage about 40 things at a time, which I still think is, on my best days, I can get 40. Most of the time I think it's a lot less. And we filter these things out so that we can actually live our lives. We don't want to have to pay attention. When I leave the from behind the pulpit, I don't want to have to carefully take into account the picture on the back of the wall when I step down the stairs, because it's irrelevant. So we take all these things out, we don't look at them, and that's a good thing. It's a survival mechanism. It keeps us from going crazy and being overwhelmed. But unfortunately, sometimes we take it a little too far. And instead of filtering out those things that are irrelevant, we filter out the things we don't like. And that's where we start running into problems. And it's not so much that we filter out the things that we don't like so that they don't interfere with our lives. I, for example, I've never done this, but I don't like getting hit by other cars. So I make sure I don't. I think that's a good bit of filtering. But there are other kinds, usually in how we interact with people and how we think, that aren't quite as helpful, but we still filter them out. And we see it here. The Pharisees had come to the determination that people from God didn't do things on the Sabbath. Therefore, anything that happened on the Sabbath could not be from God. And by creating this filter, they missed the Messiah right in front of them. The people best equipped, most knowledgeable, most likely, you would think, to recognize the presence of the Messiah within them, refused to see him. Not because they were blind, either physically blind or blind through authentic ignorance, but because they chose not to see. We've all been around people who refuse to see what we think is right in front of them. They willfully close their eyes and refuse to admit what's going on. It's called denial. Sometimes it's helpful. Sometimes it gives us a bit of distance. It's one of the stages of grief, and that point we spend in denial is usually what gives us a little bit of room so we can process the rest of this catastrophic event. Most of the time, denial is just not at all helpful. Deciding that you shouldn't pay taxes because you're you, and denying the right of the government to take taxes is not helpful in the long term. In the short term, you will have more money. In the long term, you will have more jail. It's just not useful. And if you refuse to see these things, if you refuse to see the legitimate rights of the government to make you pay taxes, well, you're just going to get in trouble. Willful blindness is a terrible thing that all of us do all the time. And it's kind of frustrating because often willful blindness is one of those things that at the beginning you can do something about it. At the beginning you can choose to see what's actually there. But the habits of a lifetime will really render the distinction between willful blindness and actual blindness almost irrelevant. We've all talked to people with deeply ingrained lifelong prejudices that you simply can't get through. It's as if it's a psychosis. Their world just doesn't function. And everything can be explained in such a way that their world makes sense to them in the ways they want it to make sense. I once heard a joke, well, presented as a joke, but it's the way that I think of, when I think of psychosis, this little story explains it in a way that nothing else does, and I think I may have even told it before, but it's the story of a man in a mental institution who was certain he was dead. And no matter what you did to him in conversation, everything he did, he would explain in the, well, no, dead people sometimes do this. And so a new psychiatrist came, and after lengthy conversation of trying to figure out what this man was actually about, said, well, wait, you've already told me how dead people's hair grows and how they can still talk and they can still move. What about bleeding? Dead people don't bleed. And the guy said, no, I think you're right. So the psychiatrist, and I'm sure this is not a particularly ethical move, took the pocket knife out of his pocket and stabbed the man in the hand. He said, there, what do you think of that? The guy looked at it and said, look at that, dead people do bleed. That's a psychosis. That's taking what you think and shaping all of the world into it. The Pharisees were, if not into psychosis, were almost there. That when they said, it's impossible for God who created the Sabbath, who created everything, it's impossible for God and those who follow God to do work on the Sabbath. Therefore, anything that happens on the Sabbath cannot be from God. Therefore, this healing had something to do other than from God. And as we see in other stories in John, where Jesus' healing is related to some kind of strange demonic activity. Were they blind? Were they actually blind? Or were they just not seeing what was actually there? Well, all of us, as I said, all of us have some things that we just find difficult to see. And mostly they're from good reasons. The Pharisees did not decide to create a religious organization that was willfully blind. They moved into this through good motives, but arrived in a place that made it virtually impossible for them to see the Messiah in their midst. And for us, when we look at this from the end of the story, we see so easily how they could have just seen Jesus for who he was. But for us, how many things are we just not seeing? For someone on the outside, it's as if we are blind, but we're just not seeing. We're looking at people who have made different life choices than ours and saying, well, they can't be believers. They worship on Saturdays. They do whatever it is they do. And we say, well, they can't be. And instead of saying, well, what is it that's going on there? Can they be? We just begin with the presumption that what we know is right, and we say that no, that can't fit. And we choose not to see. We look at our own interactions with people and we say, well, of course I have to relate to them this way because that's just the best thing to do. Instead of looking at it and saying, is this something that we just learned from someone who perhaps didn't know that the world might change down the road? I was trying to think of some illustrations of willful blindness that we've turned our back on. At least we hope we have. And one of them is, when was the last time you worried about the church splitting because in the moment of great worship, somebody raised their hand? Not to indicate they wanted to leave the room, but in honor of God. It's just not that big a deal anymore. If we're singing a hymn that's deeply meaningful to you, and you do this, nobody is going to stop the music and throw you out. Think back 35 or 40 years. They might not have stopped the music and thrown you out, but they might have made it very uncomfortable for you. Why? Because that isn't what we did. So instead of looking to see what might be happening, that the Holy Spirit might be doing a new thing, at least in some people, we said, no, that can't be possible. And many church leaders were willfully blind. That's changed now, and I think it's changed for the better. Worship practices are not quite so constrained as they once were, although apparently there are still churches that are really struggling in the whole difference between hymns and choruses. Blessings on them. They'll figure it out at some point in ways that are good for them, and hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later. But these things aren't some kind of inherent blindness within us. We've decided not to see, because we've decided what things need to look like first. That's what the Pharisees did. They said the Messiah is coming, and the Messiah will look like this, and the Messiah will behave like this, Messiah will talk like this, and if somebody comes and doesn't do all of those things, then they can't be the Messiah. Well, how many of us have decided that we only get spiritual insight from people with degrees after their name? People who pray in public, people who preach, people who have been Christians for a long time, people who are older than us. And yet some of my most profound spiritual insights have come through watching children who have no degrees over their name, are certainly not older than me, don't know more than I do, but have a connection with God that I'm just stunned by. If I decide that children have nothing to tell me about God, I'll never see that. Not because it's not there, not because I am blind, but because I'm choosing not to see. I don't want to be a Pharisee, but I realize that I am often, particularly in this way, of deciding that this is what things need to look like, and that's just the way it is. And when they don't look quite like that, instead of looking at the behavior or the person and seeing that maybe I need to expand my definitions a bit or I need to reshape what I think, I just say, no, that can't be. I work hard against that, and I know we all do. But when we come to this passage of Scripture about spiritual blindness and about the Pharisees, it's easy for us to just enjoy the moment of rejoicing that we're not Pharisees, and we're not. But as I was reflecting on these texts, and as a couple of areas of willful blindness popped up in my own life, I thought maybe, just maybe, somebody here this morning has got one or two themselves and need to be reminded, just like I did, that God is so much bigger than my categories, that he's working in so many ways that I will never be able to see unless I actually look for them, and that I can be just as willfully blind. I can choose not to see just as much as any first century Pharisee, but I don't want to. I don't think any of you want to, if this is where you find yourself. And so the message for today here in Lent, where we have this wonderful opportunity to rethink things, to reflect in different ways, maybe be open to the possibility that there are some places that you don't see because you don't want to look there or you haven't chosen to look there. And maybe, just maybe, there's some really great stuff there when we open our eyes and look for it. The people that opened their eyes to Jesus, who he was, instead of saying what he couldn't be, saw the Messiah with their own eyes, interacted with the living, breathing Son of God. The Pharisees just saw a heretic and missed an extraordinary opportunity that we don't want to miss. So as we move into the second half of Lent, it might be worth reflecting on what we're not seeing because we're not looking. Because who knows what's there for us? Maybe another view of Jesus. Amen.